Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's going to hurt in terms of jobs. It's going to hurt in terms of tax revenues, which is how we pay our teachers and police officers and everybody else. It's going to mean more belt tightening for everybody. There are stores and restaurants that will be patronized less.
Mayor Bloomberg and all these ominous signs in the economy coming to the surface at once. Consumer spending is down. Citigroup announces a massive loss. Alan Greenspan says we may be in a recession nationally. Mayor Bloomberg, as you heard there, says it does matter locally. Shades of 2000 and 1992. Now, this seems to happen every time we elect a new president for some reason. But what's the richest country in the history of the world to do when it doesn't feel so flush? Tax cuts, targeted spending, let the market work its way out of its own problems. Congress and the president have some contrasting ideas. The presidential hopefuls have some contrasting ideas. My next two guests have some contrasting ideas. They are David Keating, executive director of the Club for Growth, the political action group promoting small government and low taxes, and Josh Bivens, economist at the Economic Policy Institute, a progressive-leaning think tank. So Josh and David, thanks very much for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
And first things first, from each of your perspectives, how bad shape is the economy in? I ticked off some of the headlines. We could add declining home prices, rising foreclosures, and some other things. David Keating, as you see it, what do they add up to?
Well, right. I don't think anyone knows for sure whether we're going into a recession or not. Certainly, there are some indicators that are worrisome. The fact that employment is down, unemployment is up is one. Industrial production is off a little bit. But on the other hand, personal income has still been rising. It's up 2% year over year. Manufacturing and trade numbers are still pretty good. But clearly, there are a lot of things to worry about. And one, the key item that I'm worrying about is what's going on with the credit markets. Starting with the subprime problems, they seem to be spreading. And if we see a continuing lack of confidence from one financial entity loaning to another, you could have some real problems crop up. So to the extent that, we take action on a national level, I think we really ought to address the credit situation if all possible.
And we'll get to what to do about it. But Josh Bivens, how bad is the economy?
At the moment, it's a little tough to tell. If you didn't know any of sort of the structural problems that will be coming our way in the next year, you might not think it's that bad. You look at the last couple of months, we had some bad employment data. Private sector jobs were down 13,000 in December. One thing that's quite worrisome is the unemployment rate jumped by 30 basis points in December. It hasn't done that since 2001. And sort of a sharp rise in the unemployment rate in a given month is kind of a characteristic of an oncoming recession. The personal income numbers that are up over the year have actually been negative for the past 2 months, and so there's some worrying stuff in the very recent data. To me, the much bigger issue, though, is what we know is coming our way, and that is a huge decline in the ability of U.S. households to extract equity from their homes and spend it. I mean, essentially, we've had this housing bubble for the past 6 years, and people have been withdrawing about 6% of their total personal disposable income out of their home to increase their purchasing power. That's a really big deal. I mean, the average is about 1% that people do that on an ongoing basis. And so we're going to have this huge hole in the decline in U.S. households' purchasing power that is going to be sparked by declining home prices. And home prices are now falling at something like an 11% annualized rate. They probably have a lot more to go, and so that's going to be a huge hole in the economy coming up. And then I would just add one more thing. I mean, we all know that the gas and oil is very expensive right now. It's almost surely going to get more expensive over the next year just because of the seasonal nature. I mean, as the driving season starts in summer, gas prices tend to rise, and there's a general rule of thumb that a penny increase in the price of gas is something like a $1 billion tax increase in its effect on the economy. So if we're talking about 50 cents to a dollar increase in gas between now and the peak of the summer driving season, we're talking about, you know, an equivalent of a very large tax increase coming our way, which is the last thing you want when the economy
right,
is
and
soft.
The rising price of oil, this $100 barrel roughly oil, is something I didn't even mention in the list of factors at the beginning. Well, David, you mentioned credit, and the Daily News today has a dire take on all this. I mean, keeping in mind it is a tabloid, and you know, its page one headline tends to scream, but it screams America for sale. And they note inside that Citigroup and other major Wall Street firms are selling big shares of themselves now to Arab and East Asian investors to raise cash. And they have an op-ed by investment manager Peter Cyrus, who writes, quote, "This appears to be the end of American financial domination of the world," unquote. Is he hyperventilating or is he onto something?
Well, I think he's hyperventilating quite a bit, because the fact is the capital markets have gone increasingly international, and to the extent the world economy is growing, even if the U.S. is growing, which it has been for quite some time, it's one of the stronger economies worldwide and has been for the last two decades at least, there are other countries that are relatively smaller but are growing faster because they're starting from a smaller base. So just looking at things from a logical perspective, if the rest of the world starts catching up to us, we're going to be relatively a smaller share of the world economy and also the world capital market. So to me, it's not surprising. It's going to happen sooner or later, and right now there may be buys here in the United States. Bank of America just bought, or is in the process of buying, Countrywide Financial Corporation because they think it's good for their company, and I wouldn't be surprised to see similar investments from overseas if they think there are bargains here in the U.S.
So when you look at some of these numbers that are in the Daily News article, Citigroup sold $12.5 billion more yesterday to the Kuwait Investment Authority, a Saudi prince, and the government of Singapore. Earlier, last fall, sold $7.5 billion as a stake to an Abu Dhabi investment group. Merrill Lynch took $4.4 billion from Singapore last month. Yesterday, sold off $6.6 billion to the Kuwait Investment Authority, plus a Korean group and a Japanese bank. Morgan Stanley sold off $5 billion in December to a Chinese group. Bear Stearns, $1 billion infusion in October from a Chinese brokerage firm. All of this, you're saying, David, in your opinion, adds up to global growth. Therefore, the U.S. has a smaller percentage rather than American shrinkage?
Well, no, I don't think it's American shrinkage. I think part of it is they're doing it because they see good buys here in the U.S. Almost by definition, they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't see it as a good buy. And the other thing is, what can we do about it? I mean, we wouldn't want Congress to pass a law saying they couldn't do this, because our credit problems would get much worse. And that's one of the problems that both Josh and I seem to agree on here, is that this is an area of concern. And if we were to cut off that access to capital here in the United States, that would just make our problems worse.
And I'm sure we'll get to some areas of rather sharp disagreement in just a minute. But Josh, anything on this?
I would say something on it. I've got almost no worry about the U.S. losing its financial domination, because frankly that's never done too much for me, and it hasn't done too much for most working Americans. I mean, there's a really key issue here, which is that over the past 6 or 7 years, among the other imbalances in the economy, we've become an economy that runs a really big trade deficit, and so we have fewer manufacturing jobs than we probably should have. But the flip side of that trade deficit has been this big inflow of foreign capital, and that has kept interest rates lower than they would otherwise be. It helped spur, not cause, but helped keep going and spur the housing market bubble, which for all the bad it did, it did create construction jobs. And so from 2000 to 2007, we essentially had too few manufacturing jobs and too many construction jobs relative to what a balanced economy would look like. We're now seeing that kind of unwind, and we're going to have the real danger is that you're going to have a big outflow of foreign capital leading to an increase in interest rates, killing even more construction jobs before we get the boost from exports. So far, that hasn't happened. So far, we've actually managed to ramp up exports a little bit. That's kind of made up for some of the construction jobs we lost. And that's a pretty healthy thing. And so to me, the problem isn't so much the problem of getting a lot of money from foreign investors is not a recent one. It's actually a problem of the last 6 years, and it's only a problem to the degree that it's led us to have a sort of an unbalanced economy. And so I think what we're going to see over the next couple of years is a little bit of an unwinding of that. And as long as it happens, you know, not precipitously, not foreign investors taking all their money out at once and causing a crisis, that's actually going to be a healthy thing if we become a little less reliant on foreign investment that props up our own economy. So I think there isn't a foreign angle here, But I don't think it's a problem of us somehow losing global dominance or anything like that. It is purely a mechanical problem of getting to a more balanced economy.
My guests on WNYC, Josh Bivens from the Liberal-Leaning Economic Policy Institute, David Keating from the Conservative-Leaning Club for Growth. And let's get into the presidential hopefuls on this. They're sounding somewhat different in tone and content. In general, the Democrats want the government to stimulate the economy. Clinton and Edwards say about $70 billion in spending, depending on how bad things get. Obama seems a little different, proposing a $250 a person tax cut or rebate. The Republicans, in general, prefer to let the market work and implement their long-term strategies, tax cuts especially, except Giuliani is proposing an immediate corporate tax cut. David Keating, as you see it, is that a relatively fair, quick summary of the candidates' positions?
Yes, I think it is, although there are obviously many more candidates out there, but those are among the leading candidates in their positions.
What would you add that you think is important?
Well, I mean, Fred Thompson also has a significant tax cut package that he announced early on. He also is trying. He's one of the really only candidates that's talking about the long-term entitlement problems that loom over our economy. Now, this isn't something that's going to make a difference in the next 2 or 3 years, but over the coming decade or two, that's very important. And he's really the only candidate talking about this. Of course, he doesn't seem to be getting anywhere, so that's a bad sign.
Right. But the Republicans in general, including Thompson, seem to fall back on their long-term proposals, and Josh, tell me if you see it differently. Giuliani seems to want to be the one among that group that's stepping it up a little bit and saying, look, I'm proposing a 10 percentage point tax cut for corporations. That was part of my proposal anyway. But now I'm saying let's do it immediately to address this downturn.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you've said is a basically fair characterization of where people are coming from on this. I would note, you know, it doesn't break down in terms of the urgency of sort of short-term stimulus. It doesn't break down perfectly along ideological lines. I mean, Martin Feldstein, who is a chief of the Council of Economic Advisors under Ronald Reagan, is actually pushing for some short-term, rather quick stimulus that I don't think looks very much like a Republican candidate. So that there is some you know, divergence of opinion there.
So when people talk about spending, government spending, as the stimulus during a recession or a near recession, what are they talking about, Josh? What kind of spending? This is the kind of thing I would imagine you support. What should the government spend tens of billions of dollars on?
Well, I mean, as a general rule, the spending should be any stimulus, whether tax cuts or spending, needs to take effect quickly. It needs to get money into people's pockets quickly so they can spend. Probably the best targets for government spending are improved or expanded unemployment benefits and increases in food stamp, both the level food stamps, both the levels and the eligibility. Often what you get in a recession is Congress will step in and provide for enhanced or extended unemployment benefits after the job market has been bad for a while because state-level unemployment insurance triggers that provide for extended benefits don't kick in fast enough. We think we should do this proactively now. By all accounts, extended unemployment benefits are probably the single best stimulus in terms of bang for the buck. It is money to people who need it, who will spend it right away, and will get it circulated into the economy. There's also a lot of public infrastructure investments that are planned, finished, ready to go, and only lacking funding. I mean, you've got a lot of school districts that would start, you know, in the next month on another project if they just had funding for it. And so we've got a stimulus package. We're calling it the Strategy for Economic Rebound. And we get pretty specific. I mean, we've got spending on bridges and infrastructure, green investment, school construction, and roads, rails, and ports. And we have all looked at things that can all be implemented very quickly, and that's key to government spending. There may be a lot of long-term social needs the government spending can address, and we can argue about those, but in terms of stimulus, you want money that will be spent very quickly.
David Keating from Club for Growth, how much of that would you support?
Well, I don't think it's going to do much good, to tell you the truth, because government, almost by definition, moves very slowly. Congress itself moves very slowly. Just look at how long it took them to address the alternative minimum tax problem. They knew going into the session last year that unless Congress passed an extension of relief from the alternative minimum tax, a huge alternative minimum tax increase was going to go in effect in 2007. And they diddled and diddled, and finally, in late December, they passed it, too late for the IRS to adjust its forms. And now, due to the the procrastination by Congress, it looks like the IRS is going to be delayed in even getting the normal tax refunds out because of the problem setting up the computers at the IRS. So that's something where Congress had a lot of advance warning. Here, they're not even sure, well, what kind of is there a recession? How severe will it be? Congress takes a long time to act, and then it goes down to another level of bureaucracy and on and on and on. You know, short of extending the unemployment benefits, everything else, I think, would take too long to really have any effect. And it's not clear to me it would have much of an effect anyway, because if the money is sent out and spent that way, it comes out of some other part of the economy somewhere else. So the stimulus effect is probably a lot less than it appears. I think there are some things they could do that are looming over the economy that are adding to economic uncertainty by people that are going to be making big economic bets. And I think it's, I mean, we know, for example, there the tax cuts passed in 2001 and 2003 are all set to expire in 2010. Right now, we have an implication of a huge tax increase on the economy, and nothing's being done on that front. We also have a number of free trade agreements pending in Congress. Nothing is really significant has been done there. So there are a lot of worries from people who are would make big economic investments, and I got to believe that's part of the problem that we may be facing either now or in the immediate future.
You want to come back on that, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say a couple things. One is, it's true. Congress, especially this one, and especially with a divided government, is not known for acting real quickly. But, you know, stimulus is better quick, but it's not necessarily worthless if it's not so quick. I mean, I think we've gotten a little used to very quick recessions, the recession of the early 1990s and the early 2000s. In GDP terms, were relatively quick. The economy bounced back and started growing again. In terms of employment and jobs and incomes, they were actually quite long. I mean, we were losing jobs 2 years after the official end of the 2001 recession. And so I think stimulus, even if it takes a while to get through Congress, still has the opportunity to do a lot of good in supporting, you know, one, this recession just may not be as short as other ones that we've seen recently. And two, even the short ones we've seen recently have had long-run employment impacts to them that the stimulus could address. In terms of the long-term tax cuts that are set to expire a couple years from now, I mean, the Congressional Budget Office has just released a quick one-pager on things that will sort of bang for the buck of different stimulus options. And absolutely last on their list is extending the tax cuts that were passed under the Bush administration in 2001 and 2003. And so the idea that making these permanent or pushing off their expiration date is in any way sort of relevant for what happens to the economy over the next couple of years, it's something the CBO sure doesn't believe in, and I think they're right on this.
We'll continue in a minute, and among the things we'll talk about is whether there is actually an issue now, a policy difference. People say there are no policy differences between Obama and Clinton and Edwards in the Democratic primary race. Well, maybe there is one here on what kind of stimulus, spending or a tax cut. Stay with us as we talk about what to do about the economic downturn, and we want your suggestions. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. Join this conversation. Should government do something about the country's economy right now? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.
Yeah, that's why I made the announcement that that we should do tax cuts right now. I favor a program right now of doing three things. Strategic tax cuts that stimulate the economy, like cutting the corporate tax from 35% to 25%, which would be an immediate boost in jobs and, I think, investment in the United States.
Rudy Giuliani with his idea of what to do about the economy right now, sinking into recession, according to many, many analysts, and so many immediate problems. coming to the fore right now. Consumer spending is down, and that's something that's surprising people. Everybody said, even recently, well, the great economic engine of Americans continuing to spend no matter what, even if it means borrowing to spend no matter what, seems to be unstoppable. Well, it finally got stopped in this Christmas season, and those numbers are coming out now. So that on top of the foreclosure problems and Citigroup announcing a massive loss yesterday, which sent the Dow down close to 300 points and all this other stuff going on. People are starting to debate, including President Bush and the Democratic Congress. They may come to a bipartisan plan, which is something they don't do much of, on what to do about the economy with some kind of stimulus package. And it's an issue in the presidential race, and we're talking about it with David Keating from the Conservative Club for Growth and Josh Bivens from the Liberal Economic Policy Institute. And listeners, what do you want the government to do about the economy? Anything? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And you know what, gentlemen, a number of people are calling in about this question of foreign investment that we talked about from the Daily News from the Daily News this morning. So let's take some of that. If Citigroup and Merrill Lynch and Bear Stearns are selling off pieces themselves to investors from Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and Singapore, does this matter? Richard in Great Neck, does this matter?
Oh, it definitely matters, I believe.
Go ahead.
You know, the market, as one of your guests said before, is best taken care of by the market. You know, not government involvement always seems to throw a monkey wrench into the works, and it delays recovery. But the other thing is that all of this investment by oil states also has a benefit on the war on terrorism, simply because they don't want to see their investment attacked.
Well, that's assuming that the governments of those countries are somehow pro-terrorist. But I don't know. David from the Club for Growth, what do you think about that? Is there a relationship there? If the Arab states or Arab businesses are very invested in the United States and therefore have an extra incentive not to see the United States economy brought down by massive terrorist attacks, does that help the fight against terrorism, in your opinion?
I think it has to. I'm not saying we don't know how significant it will be, but I think it's got to have some favorable impact, because these people who have these investments will pressure their own governments to try to cooperate in the war on terror. So no one benefits who has money invested across country lines from uncertainty and possible terrorism. So I think it probably would help.
Something else on this? Jim in Union City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Well, I didn't tell you screener. I was interested, though, in the comment in The New Yorker regarding the Club for Growth that Hedrick Hertzberg made on his profile with Mr. Huckabee in the December 3rd New Yorker. But that aside...
What did Huckabee say? He called them the Club for... There was a...
Yeah, he said they called them the Club for Greed. And they did invest heavily in the Michigan...
For Romney, yes,
yeah.
And that's fair enough. As relevant disclosure, David, Club for Growth has no love for Huckabee, who did call you Club for Greed. And did you put money behind the Romney campaign in Michigan?
No, but clubforgrowth.net ran some issue ads urging people to contact Huckabee to have Huckabee adopt some more pro-growth, pro-taxpayer policies. And we think clearly, we're not big fans of Huckabee's economic platform, which seems to be something that is anti-free trade, pro-government spending, and he raised taxes a lot while he was Arkansas governor. So I don't want to turn the program into one on Huckabee, but...
Because we didn't draw a distinction, and Jim will get back to you in a second for your other question, but we didn't draw a distinction much earlier between the various Republican candidates who've been saying that to address the possible recession, in general, there should be tax cuts, and Huckabee's among them. But you see, and go ahead and lay it out a little bit, you see a difference between Huckabee and some of the others in terms of the tax policies that they probably implement and other economic policies as president?
Well, we're big believers Now, when you make financial investments, you don't want to look at past performance to predict future performance. But our belief in studying politicians is if you look at how they've acted in the past, it's usually a pretty good indicator of how they would act in the future if elected to another office. And we looked at his record in Arkansas, and we found a lot of disturbing things. He supported many tax increases. Spending went up by nearly 50% when you adjust for inflation and population. So he oversaw a rather large increase in state government taxes and spending. He's also been one who's been pro-regulation. He's just said a lot of strange things as well on the campaign trail about trade policy and regulation generally. So,
and Josh from Economic Policy Institute, do you want to weigh in with any difference you see, for good or for bad, from your point of view, between Huckabee and the other Republicans?
I got to say, I haven't been following it hugely closely. I would say one thing. I mean, I see a pretty big gap between Huckabee's rhetoric, which seems to be quite concerned with kind of the typical American family, and sort of the one substantive policy thing he's gotten behind, which is a hugely regressive sales tax that will not do much good for most typical American families. So I think most of the difference that I see in sort of the limited amount I've been following the campaign is rhetorical rather than real substance and what they're putting their names behind right now.
Do you...
If I could just say something here. We see plenty of things to criticize in Huckabee's record, but his proposal for the fair tax, I would not characterize as a hugely regressive proposal. It's the only proposal by any of the candidates or any substantive proposal out there that would completely untax the poor. And none of the other tax proposals do that, and Huckabee's does. So
There are different takes on that, and we actually had a separate debate on the show the other day just on the fair tax proposal. But that's something that Club for Growth likes about Huckabee. You do like that national sales tax proposal to replace the income tax, yes?
Well, yeah, but we don't believe he'd actually do it.
Why not?
Because he doesn't have a record of doing that sort of thing as governor.
You think he just came to it for his presidential run, last year?
Yes, and it was a huge factor in his support blooming in Iowa. A number of fair tax supporters went to the Ames straw poll, and he narrowly beat another strong social conservative, Sam Brownback, who then dropped out of the race. So a lot of the evangelical support flocked to Huckabee, and so that's where he really emerged in Iowa. I think it was a big factor politically.
Right.
I don't believe he'd actually pursue it as president.
And poor Jim in Union City is waiting all this time to ask his follow-up question. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, that's just the commenting on doesn't the shift in capital overseas make it more likely the price of oil to be pegged to the euro, and wouldn't an even ever weakening dollar then hurt us, the U.S., even more? We'd be paying a premium for the barrel and the conversion.
Josh, you want to take that?
Sure. I mean, a small bit of the rise in the price of oil that Americans pay is related to overall weakness in the dollar. It's not a big part so far. Oil's gotten more expensive for Europeans and Asians as well. It's just mostly the demand and supply in the oil market. I mean, I have to believe that even if you have sort of a wholesale repricing of oil sort of set in euros rather than dollars, that won't have a big effect on sort of what Americans pay for oil, unless for some reason the U.S. dollar becomes a currency that just will not be accepted around the world. Even if the official price is listed in euros, people are going to take dollars for it for, I got to think, the rest of my lifetime. So I actually don't think that the issue of what oil is priced in is a big one. What is a big one is the fall in the value of the dollar. And, you know, that's one more thing that's adding to upward price pressure. And so that's going to make things that Americans buy more expensive. I'm afraid it's kind of inevitable. The dollar's been too low for the past 5 or 6 years, and we're kind of paying the bill on that. But it is one more thing that's going to put pressure on American pocketbooks over the next couple of years.
We're talking about how to address the economic downturn with Josh Bivens from the Liberal Economic Policy Institute and David Keating from the Conservative Club for Growth. And Marcia is it Arlington, New York?
Yes, it is.
You know, I don't know that town. Where is Arlington, New York?
It's just outside Poughkeepsie.
Oh, wow. So we're getting out. Our 50,000 watts are booming north this morning.
Absolutely.
What's your comment?
To the quickest way to get money into the economy is to increase, and there are already existing ways. It would take no time at all. Just increase the amount of money available for Section 8, available for welfare, available for food stamps. Give it to people who are really hard up, and they will spend it immediately. They will not do long-term investments or anything like that. I think the seniors and the poor, and I think the families of servicemen are having a really hard time. That could be very quick. Then long-term, since there is a limited amount of oil in the earth and we are facing global warming, start moving toward massive increases in public transportation and let Michigan, which is suffering so from the loss of car development in America, become a center of construction for public transportation. Invest in that.
Marcia, thank you very much. Bob in Manhattan, I think, has a pretty different take, including on oil. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
My quick fix would be, how about we just get rid of the tariff on Brazilian ethanol? Because I just read an article that most of the inflation, that's record inflation that we're having right now, is caused by fuel and food prices. And also, I got to commend you on the keeping the Bush tax cuts, because that helps people plan for the future. And uncertainty causes problems.
Bob, thank you. So different people with different views. And we're almost out of time. But, Josh, do we see a real policy difference here among the Democratic hopefuls between Obama on the one hand for proposing a $250 tax cut or rebate per person right away, and Clinton and Edwards on the other for emphasizing government spending, as Marcia from Arlington was?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a difference there. I mean, I would say that I think both the Clinton and Edwards plans also have some tax cuts in there. I mean, even our own plan, EPI, we're not known as big tax cutters. But we've got a substantial part of our economic strategy is targeted tax cuts. But I do think it's fair to say that the Obama plan leans more heavily on those and highlights the tax cuts more than the government spending. And I would say one of your callers was right. I mean, one thing that does get spent very quickly in its effective stimulus is any sort of social safety net program. I mean, that is by definition money to people who will spend it right away. And so that's why I say unemployment benefits are a big part of our stimulus.
Now, Congress and the president, we just have 30 seconds, but Congress and the president seem both to be interested in an economic stimulus plan. This would all happen before the presidential election. Do either of you think, and we literally have 20 seconds for each of you, do you think that the president and the Democratic Congress can come to yes on something? David, do you?
Well, unfortunately, probably not anything useful. But two things I haven't talked about is, early I said a lot of the problems are credit-related. Andrew Kaplan at NYU has an innovative debt equity mortgage plan that I think would make refinancing easier and help stabilize the housing market. So I think Congress should adopt that.
Josh, a last word, 20 seconds. Can Congress and the president come up with something?
I'm a little pessimistic. I think one thing that could be useful and has some real prospects for passing is aid to states and localities to offset declining tax revenues there. We're already seeing a big decline in state tax revenues, and that will be a big pinch on the economy. So anything to reverse that would be really welcome.
Which is, in fact, where we started, with Mayor Bloomberg saying that he's now seeing static revenues in New York because of the housing downturn, and he thinks the Wall Street troubles are also going to affect the city's coffers. So now people are starting to debate tax increases in New York City as well at the local level. So David Keating from Club for Growth, Executive Director, Josh Bivens, Economist at the Economic Policy Institute, thank you both very much for talking about the economy with us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. Does school start too early in the morning? Stay tuned.